any time soon. I just want to confirm the attendance of Honorable A.S. Smith, Honorable Maleka, Honorable Mbali Dlamini, Honorable Ndongeni, Honorable Haddad, Honorable Shaikh, Honorable Mutamai. Yes, no, we are sufficient. Honorable, pardon us, and I apologize. Ongigas, I'm sorry, I must acknowledge you. We are going to start. Just Moss and Fuad do the same thing, just tell other members to lock in so that we will be starting our meeting. And I've also seen the attendance, in attendance is the MEC for COCTA in KZN. We start in a minute, just to allow everyone to be ready and to be settled. Good morning, honorable members. We are now starting with the meeting. It is some few minutes after 10 o'clock. I want to take this opportunity to heartily welcome all of you. Firstly, to apologize from my side that I'm not switching on my gadget. I'll switch it on in the next 15 minutes. I wasn't sure about load shedding. I had to drive to a particular place where I was certain that there is sufficient electricity. But now I'm advised at home that the electricity is back, and I will be driving home within the next few minutes, and I'll switch on my gadget, my video. I want to welcome all of you to this important meeting. This is a meeting of the Select Committee on COCTA, Human Settlements, Water and Sanitation. Today, the last day of the month, the 31st of October. I always talk about this day. It's an important day in the calendars of our country. But be that as it may, we are meeting today because we want to consider the state of municipalities in KZN, especially the interventions that were made over a period of time by the provincial government of KwaZulu-Natal. We do so because we need to satisfy ourselves that the interventions in terms of Section 139 of the Constitution are working, are yielding the results, and there is progress, because as we all know, when a provincial government invokes Section 139 of the Constitution, especially B and C, it is when, in its respective view, the municipality cannot or is unable to fulfill its executive obligations under the Constitution. It means that the situation necessitates the intervention in terms of Section 139. Now, today we are going to make a reflection on that situation. We have visited the KZN province on several occasions, especially to assess the state of the municipalities in that respect, to enable us as a committee take a decision whether to approve or to disapprove the interventions that which were made by the provincial government. This is what we are going to do for the rest of the day. Welcome, Honorable MEC, Moloi, Moroba Moloi.
Thank you, Chair.
Are
thank
you,
Chair.
Are
am I audible?
Very, very much,
sir.
Yes, I want to take this opportunity to welcome you warmly in our meeting. It's for the first time that we interact with you. We have interacted with all of your predecessors, engaged them, talked to them, advised one another, sometimes have heated discussions. But this is the way to go, because as Parliament, we're doing our job. We oversee the executive functions. We want to monitor your performance in respect of the work that you do, especially the interventions, in this case, the interventions in terms of Section 139(1)(b). I've indicated those who are in attendance, but for formalities, we, myself, we have Honorable Bayer Smith, we have Honorable Audrey Maleka, we have Honorable Mbali Dlamini, we have Honorable Ndongeni Nokuzola Ndongeni, we have Honorable Nhlanhla Hadebe, we have Honorable Said Shay, and this unmarked gadget, Honorable Motsamai. Kenny Motsamai. We are on, sorry, I don't know why do I forget Honorable Speakers, Badenhorst. You are all welcome, Honorable Members. I want to check with Moss. Any apologies? I know that Moss has indicated that the Minister, Tembin Kadime, as well as the Deputy Minister, Paxton, have tendered their apologies. They are not going to be part of this meeting, but nevertheless we are proceeding with the meeting, because the meeting is quite important. But I want to establish formally. Any other apologies, Mo?
Morning, Chair. Chair, in terms of our record, we did not receive any formal apology, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you very much. We are moving forward. I want to invite the Honorable MEC. Over to you. You will guide us in terms of how we are going to proceed, and if there are any introductions that you want to make in respect of the officials who are accompanying you, you can do that. But over to you. I propose that we give you about 45 minutes or so. We'll see how it goes at the most, and take us through the state of 139 interventions in KZN. Over to you, Honorable MEC.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Greetings to you, Honorable Dodovu, and all honorable members that are present in the meeting, and all parliamentary support staff. On our side, I'm with the SOD, SOD Tubani, and also Chief Director, Mrs. Krishnan, who's representing the DDG Katide, and also I have Ms. Ali as part of the delegation that we are with. Honorable Chair and honorable members, I think we must say I'm honored as well to address this August meeting as the MEC Wagakokta, and providing an update on the state of our municipalities placed under Section 139 of our Constitution. As we convene here, it is essential to recall that our primary objective in evoking Section 139 is to make informed decisions and extend the necessary support to revitalize and stabilize these municipalities. Section 139(1)(a) stipulates that the Provincial Executive Council must issue a directive to a municipality when it fails to fulfill its obligation. In line with the mandate, our department has appointed administrators to the affected municipalities. These administrators are playing a vital role in ensuring that municipalities adopt approved budget, revenue-raising measures, and recovery plans to meet their obligation. In KwaZulu-Natal, we had intervened in 12 municipalities under Section 139 of the Constitution since 2016. it is not, it's noteworthy that all intervention except for local municipality and Madlangeni were approved by the minister and the NCOP. We have successfully terminated intervention in Ndumeni and Richmond. In Ndumeni, we terminated in November 2019, and in Richmond, we terminated in 2021, which were now stable and receiving support under Section 154 of the Constitution. In July 2021 and July 2022, we had to intervene again in Umkhanyako municipality due to the budget approval failures. Unfortunately, the municipality has now met intervention requirement by approving the budget integrated development plan. As of 25 April 2023, the Provincial Executive Council resolved to extend 8 interventions in Impo. Nkosi Mtuba local municipality uMzinyathi uthukela 1st of October 2023. However, the Abaqulusi intervention was invalidated on the 8th of April 20, to emphasize the criteria and progress made in our intervention. We employ a set of pillars to get sustainability and functionality of these municipalities, which include delivery service, basic services, good governance, sound financial management, and building institutional capacity. Regrettably, these municipalities were lacking in these areas, compelling us to intervene in the interest of local governance and service delivery. While some has been under intervention longer than desired, several have demonstrated substantial improvement due to our support. Common challenges identified in these municipalities include the failure to implement infrastructure projects, inadequate oversight, neglecting investigations into fraud and corruption, cash flow problems, negative audit outcomes, failure to submit annual financial statements, and prolonged vacancies in senior managerial positions. Nonetheless, some of municipalities like uMsunduze have shown significant improvement. We continually monitor their situation, assess their financial health, and consider removing them from the intervention list. While interventions are essential, we also encountered challenges. The absence of legal framework to regulate Section 139 intervention, except for a draft bill under consideration, remains a concern. Political stability, instability, and infighting, especially in hung councils, often underlie the need for intervention. Furthermore, the lack of enforcement measures for Section 106 investigation report hampers the implementation of their recommendation. We also need a framework to regulate the appointment of ministerial representatives / administrators. In many cases, Section 139 intervention results from poor oversight by council and relevant portfolio committees. Strengthening the selection of committee members, particularly those oversee finances, infrastructure, and impact, is essential. Legal challenges can lead to exorbitant cost and delay support implementation. To address these challenges, we have enhanced our early warning system in municipalities to provide support before formal intervention becomes necessary. We advocate for a strengthening legal framework to standardize Section 139 intervention. Conclusion, it is evident that the 7 local municipalities under constitutional intervention still require intensive support to improve their performance and stability. The prevalence of the negative opinions from the Auditor General in more than 5 of these municipalities is concerning. We are also working on the recommendations to place Mpofana, uThukela, and uMzinyathi under Section 139(5) to address their financial challenges. Honorable Chair, I want to pause here and give my team, particularly Mrs. Krishna, to present the entire a presentation on how the state of these municipalities look like and where we have made improvement. She's going to also to intervene. I hope I'm still in order, Chair, in doing so. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. Would the Chair like us to proceed with the presentation?
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, are we still audible on your side?
Yes, you are audible.
Yes, you are, MC. Proceed. We will be listening to your official
and
addresser.
Thank you.
Thank you, MEC. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members of the Select Committee. Good morning, and I will just be following on from the MEC's preamble and introduction. We will go into just a little bit more detail in respect of the actual interventions to apprise the committee of both progress and the current status in these municipalities. The MEC has already covered the overview. I'm sure that the committee is aware of the different types of interventions in terms of the constitution. Just to say that at Umkhanyakude district, as the MEC had said, we had closed out the 139-4 interventions because for two consecutive years, due to political instability, the municipality had failed to adopt its budget. And we only have remaining Section 139-1B interventions in the province. This has already been covered by the MEC. I think the fact that the legal challenges do affect our interventions is a case in point is Abakulusi intervention, where the court had invalidated this intervention. We are still of the view, though, that the municipality requires intense support. And we have approached the court, obviously, for leave to appeal, which has been granted by the courts, and the matter is ongoing. At this stage, though, the intervention has been suspended. Chairperson, these are the interventions, the 8 and Abakulusi included, but 7 of them are in progress. The commencement dates of these interventions have been reflected. I think the MEC has highlighted the fact that although some of these have been long in progress, we still believe there is much to be done in some of these municipalities. And until such time as we are confident that the municipality is able to sustain itself, has all the institutional and governance arrangements in place, and is consistently making progress, we will have to remain there. Otherwise, we will be, as a department, criticized later for not having ensured that these municipalities are sustainable, and the likelihood of regression always remains at this stage. So we'll move on to the first municipality where we have an intervention, which is the Umzinyathi District Municipality. This intervention commenced in 2017. The MEC has highlighted the 5 pillars that we assess municipalities against in order to determine their performance and their failure to fulfill their obligations as well. In the case of Umzinyathi, the first pillar at the time of the intervention was not raised, and that was delivering community participation. But there was a failure to implement infrastructure projects. In particular, it was the regional bulk infrastructure grant projects that were not implemented. There was poor oversight by council and a failure to conduct investigations into maladministration, fraud and corruption, which then led to the MEC for local government instituting an investigation in terms of Section 106 of the Municipal Systems Act. There were serious financial challenges, cash flow challenges, unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, the negative audit outcome, and the failure at the time to submit the annual financial statements on time to the Auditor General. There was also institutional instability with vacancies in key managerial positions, and that led to administrative instability in the municipality. We did a comprehensive analysis, Honourable Chair and members, of all interventions to make sure that there were still grounds for the intervention, and to try and to attempt to reduce the number of interventions in the province as well. But we still find that there are lapses in the case of Umzinyathi. Although there is expenditure on the grants, there are still significant backlogs for water and sanitation, which talks to elements of planning for infrastructure, as well as the operation and maintenance of infrastructure. So there are still serious service delivery issues that need to be addressed, which we are attempting to support with other stakeholders, such as MISA and technical experts. At the good governance level, the council is stable, so council itself is meeting together with all of its portfolio committees. There has been, as I said, the investigation by the MEC that was then done and concluded in January 2019 and tabled in council with 23 recommendations. And you will see, Chairperson, that between 2019 and 2023, 16 out of the 23 recommendations have been implemented. So there are still 7 recommendations relating to the findings of the forensic investigation that are outstanding and become part of the processes that we would ensure the ministerial representatives would process. The financial situation of Umzinyathi District has worsened. The municipality had an adverse audit opinion. It improved to a qualification and then subsequently declined again in 2022 to an adverse audit opinion. It is the only municipality in the province with an adverse audit opinion. UIFW, it was sitting at 244 million. It is now, it had escalated further to 2.3 billion rand, although under the latest intervention, we have been able to reduce it to 2 billion rand, but it still remains extremely high. There are amounts that are incurred during the year still, so there are still weak controls, which we are working on through a financial expert and the ministerial representative, and the current audit is in progress. So we are still working with the adverse findings at this stage. The inability to deal with UIFW and the escalating figures related to UIFW, which we have reported wherever they exist in these municipalities, is an indication of poor oversight by council, and it is an indication of a municipal public accounts committee that is not effective. So although we are saying there is stable governance and council and its committees are meeting, that is compliance. We want to ensure effectiveness of these committees. And what we are doing to ensure that this is improved is we are providing hands-on support at impacts of the intervention municipalities. We have crafted intervention plans for UIFW for all of the intervention municipalities. We are tabling those in council, and we will ensure that there is adherence to those plans. Senior manager posts, there is stable administration at this point in time. So senior manager posts have been filled, but recently, 2 months ago, the CFO was promoted to the position of accounting officer. So we are in the process of ensuring that the CFO post is full. So around Umzinyathi District, I think I've covered this in the presentation itself. There are still gaps around ensuring service delivery takes place through the implementation of infrastructure grants and investment in repairs and maintenance and infrastructure, implementation of the forensic investigation, financial management, as well as just ensuring the filling of the municipal manager post. Chairperson, Otukela District is the next municipality that is under intervention, and I won't repeat some of the measures that we have taken as I've indicated, but to highlight that in this district there are community protests.
Let me know. Well, that's right. Good. Well, I'll be long.
Chair, can you mute, please? Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I will continue. There were community protests and a lack of infrastructure provision. There was a failure also to spend infrastructure grants. Grants were not cash-backed. There was a lack of capacity to undertake the water and sanitation function. Similar challenges of weak oversight and ineffective impact at Otukela District. Poor financial management represented by the negative audit outcome and poor financial measures. And then there were labor disputes and lack of technical skills. As we sit today, Chairperson, some progress has been achieved in terms of the spending of infrastructure grants, but there are still persistent public protests for the lack of service delivery. MIG grants, as you see, were 96.1% spent, so there was still slight under expenditure on MIG. The WSIG was 100% spent, but there are persistent water losses. So due to the fact that the infrastructure remains in a poor state, the lack of investment in repairs and maintenance due to cash flow challenges, we're still finding that there are significant technical and non-revenue losses. The grants have been under the intervention ring-fenced, and we have placed them into separate investment accounts, which enables us to ensure that they are not utilized for operational expenditure. There is still a lack of capacity to undertake the water and sanitation function in the municipality. The oversight, I've highlighted the fact that there is an ineffective impact due to UIF not being resolved, and you will see under financial management that the municipality incurred 287.7 million rand of UIFW during the last financial year and is currently sitting with a balance of 517 million rand that has not been resolved. So again, we are pointing to weak impacts, audit committee, and a weak council and its portfolio committees in as far as financial management is concerned. The Section 106 recommendations have been implemented, but there is resistance to this intervention at this point in time. The municipality had objected to the ministerial representative, and we had to take the matter to court. We do currently have a ministerial representative in place undertaking his functions without hindrance. But it's energy, cost, and effort that we would not want to deal with in intervention municipalities. The financial situation remains weak at Otukela District. And to illustrate the lack of financial oversight, the MECs for finance and MECs for local government both met with the full council of Otukela District before consideration of the intervention renewal. And what we found was that council appeared to be unaware of the serious state of finances in the municipality. And that then really points to poor oversight. The ratios that we assessed are reflected there. Cash coverage of less than a month at Otukela District, the norm is 1 to 3 months, and unfunded budget being a fundamental issue at Otukela District, which needs to be addressed. And at this stage, Honorable Chair, we'd like to highlight the fact that we have been engaging with the Treasury as well as COGTA, because given the serious financial problems and in particular the unfunded budget at the municipality, this municipality meets the criteria for an intervention in terms of Section 139.5 of the MFMA. which allows the Provincial Executive Council to impose a financial recovery plan. And if, for whatever reason, the council fails to take measures to implement such a financial recovery plan, then the Provincial Executive Council will have the authority to dissolve such a council. We're not saying that that will happen and that the council would necessarily not comply, but that is the process that would be undertaken. So serious consideration is being given to that form of intervention at Uthukela District. There are still administrative instability issues. We find that there are staff labor instability, there is labor instability, there are staff complaints. The unions have also taken matters to the bargaining council, and the situation, although still prevalent to some degree, is being managed. It takes up a lot of time of the ministerial representative, but it is being managed, and we are seeing that we are engaging also with the stakeholders in this regard. So capacity, although it is in place with an unstable workforce, Honorable Chair and members, you will appreciate that the institution remains unstable and that we the intervention is necessary. I will not repeat what has been indicated here, but all five pillars show that there is still room, significant room for improvement in respect of Uthukela District Municipality. Chairperson, our next intervention is also 139-1B at Inkosi Langali Balele Municipality. There was mismanagement of conditional grants. There were warrants of execution against the municipality when this intervention commenced in 2017. There was also an absence of oversight and poor governance with the failure by MPACT to deal with UIFW. And there was a refusal of support and cooperation with the provincial treasury in the area of finances. And at the time, the municipality had received a disclaimer of audit opinion. This was coupled with poor financial measures and maintenance budget below the norm as well. The failure to appoint senior managers and administrative instability was also a challenge. And at the time, in particular at Inkosi Langali Balele Municipality, there was a bloated organigram. This municipality was resulted as a merger of two municipalities, and there were pay disparities, and a combination of the two municipalities led to this bloated organigram and excessive employee-related costs above the norm. At this point in time, Honorable Chair, the conditional grants have been ring-fenced and MIG has been 100% spent. We had negotiated with valid creditors and averted litigation as part of the intervention. The MPAC is now functional, and UIFW has been addressed by the municipality with a residual amount of approximately 70 million remaining outstanding. There are various motions that are tabled in this council, it indicates instability. The municipality also resisted the intervention and the ministerial representative. It is still, to a large extent, being frustrated by the municipal manager, despite a court order requiring the MM to continue with the intervention. We intend to approach the court with an order for an order, because the MM in particular is in contempt of the court order of the 13th of September. So there is also pending litigation at this municipality to declare the IFP's decision on 30th of March to expel some councillors reviewed and set aside, and to interdict the IEC from replacing the applicants and the MM from declaring a vacancy. So this immediately points to unstable governance, and that is the reason why, as the provincial government, we deem it necessary to exercise this level of intense support and measures to ensure that the municipality is stabilized. The intervention on the financial side, we eventually managed getting the financial management support into the municipality. There were financial experts placed at the municipality. The audit opinion has improved from a disclaimer audit opinion. As at 2022, the municipality had a qualified audit opinion, which still remains negative, and still much work needs to be done. So we are still also seeing at this particular municipality high cost utilization for contracted services. So 16% was spent on contracted services, and the norm is 5% in municipalities. So although we had a bloated organogram, although we have all posts that are filled and so on, we are still finding a heavy reliance on consultants. The job evaluation process also, which you see under institutional capacity, has not yet been resolved. Honourable Chair, each time that there is a change in administrative leadership or political leadership at the municipality, the process of reviewing the organogram and placement of staff appears to commence de novo. So the ministerial representative has been tasked with trying to resolve these issues as quickly as possible to engage SALGA to finalize the job evaluation processes as well as the placement processes. Chairperson, I trust that this justifies the need for the Provincial Executive Council in KwaZulu-Natal to maintain its intervention at Inkosi Langalibalele Municipality with issues still remaining on all five pillars. Mpofana Municipality is one of the longest interventions that we have had in KZN. The municipality from time to time was considered non-viable. It is a very small town and then a large area that is rural. At the time of the intervention, service delivery was a challenge. The municipality has an electricity license. We had implemented small town rehabilitation projects used with COGTA grants at the municipality, but those were mismanaged. The INEP projects had been stalled due to non-compliance with ESCOM specification, and repairs and maintenance budget was 0.82%. So the electrical infrastructure was clearly not being maintained, and that's the reason that the ESCOM specifications also could not be met. There were allegations of fraud and corruption, political interference, and dysfunctional council and committees. There was also, at the time, the speaker's failure to implement the code of conduct and the failure to apply consequence management. On area of financial management, the main challenges at Mpofana Municipality were the disclaimer of audit opinion, ballooning ESCOM debt, which at the time of the intervention commencement was at 80 million rand, honorable members. The failure to implement cost-cutting measures, and they were in financial crisis with a deficit of 26 million rand, low cash coverage, and poor ratios. The failure to appoint senior managers was also a challenge at Mpofana. The progress that has been made is that all grants have been cash-backed. The MIG expenditure was at 79.29% since the submission of the annual financial statements and the update and the reconciliations in this regard. The MIG expenditure has improved to over 90%. There was a housing grant fund that was mismanaged, and payment arrangements have now been entered into with the Department of Human Settlements for reimbursement of those grants. So that is still a process underway. The elections brought a new leadership, and council structures were reestablished and are functional. There was an investigation in terms of Section 106(1)(b), which was introduced, and the council has now implemented all of the recommendations of the 106. So from a council point of view, there appears to be some willingness to turn around the municipality. However, the financial position of the municipality has not improved. There is still a qualified audit opinion. As I indicated, Eskom debt has risen to 414 million rand. It is the highest in the province. The municipality is operating the electricity business at a loss. We have engaged Eskom. We are in the process of negotiating a active partnering arrangement with Eskom, but there are some impediments. We have also considered the revoking of the license, electricity license, and Eskom taking over the license. But the impediment there is that Eskom requires the network to be at a particular standard for it to take over, and there is no funding either at the municipality or at a provincial level to invest in the upgrade of that infrastructure. So we are still engaging with Eskom and NERSA and other stakeholders in this regard. Financial crisis remains. It has a negative cash coverage with electricity running at a loss and being the only service other than property, refuse collection. The municipality's viability is seriously compromised. Consumer debt is not disclosed, and so we are dealing with those matters through the intervention. Unfunded budget is also a case in point at Mpofana Municipality, and as I've explained with Uthukela District, this municipality also meets the criteria for an intervention in terms of Section 139(5) of the Constitution for imposing a financial recovery plan. Although we have been successful in cutting some costs, we need to now ring-fence the electricity funding and make arrangements with Eskom going forward. The posts have been filled, and the process of just the filling of the one post of corporate and community services is in progress. This was one of the intervention requests where the two posts, separate posts of corporate and of community, because of the size of the municipality, were merged, and we have then combined those functions to a single senior manager in the municipality. Chairperson, I hope that the committee is able to see that Mpofana Municipality still requires intense support from the province, and notes that the municipality meets the criteria for an intervention in terms of Section 139(5) of the Constitution. The next municipality is Mtubatuba Municipality. At the time of intervention in 2019, there were dysfunctional ward committees, service delivery protests. The service delivery side, waste management was not being dealt with. They were operating an unlicensed landfill site, and oversight structures were dysfunctional, which included the council, it included the collapse of meetings, falsification of council resolutions and lack of quorum, and poor oversight. Obviously, with a dysfunctional council, there's a complete failure of governance and oversight by the council. There was also a municipal valuer that was appointed that did not meet the requirements, and UIFW was not addressed. Senior management vacancies also existed at the time, and in particular the CFO post, which had remained vacant for a significant amount of time together with the Director Technical Services. As we sit in 2023, honorable members, the ward committees are functional. Our public participation unit and the rapid response support that has been provided by the department has been effective. So we are able to respond to staged public protests, all towards destabilization in the municipality. The infrastructure service delivery element, grants are spent. But the waste management issues have still not been entirely addressed, and the landfill site has not been resolved in securing a license. We are engaging with economic development and tourism and environmental affairs to make sure that we are able to fast track this particular process. The land for the landfill site has now been secured, and the feasibility study has been complete. So that was a process that took us a bit of time, but it has happened, and it still remains entirely, it's not resolved entirely. We have set up a steering committee to deal with this particular matter. From a governance point of view, the council and its oversight structures are fairly stable. There have been, however, various litigation attempts by the municipality to frustrate the intervention, and we have been back and forth to court in this regard, but we persist as a province with the understanding that there are still issues that remain unresolved in the municipality. Added to that is the fact that the municipality's financial position has deteriorated significantly. So although they have addressed UIFW, they have cash flow challenges, and the MEC has recently written to the mayor of the municipality in accordance with Section 136 of the MFMA, which requires that the MEC, if she becomes aware of serious financial problems, must consult the mayor and determine whether there is a need for a financial recovery plan. We have dispatched correspondence to the mayor and are awaiting a response from the municipality within 2 weeks, on the basis of which we will then consider the need for a financial recovery plan. So you'll see, honorable members, that there is still a need at Mthupatuba. And whilst we are undertaking interventions, and although there may be specific intervention triggers, we should not lose sight of the fact that there are issues that emerge on the ground during the course of the intervention. And it would be remiss of us as a province if we did not consider those at each point of review of an intervention, honorable members. So the positive at Mthupatuba is that the senior manager posts have been filled, and there is administrative stability. There was resistance, as indicated, to the MR, but we are now engaging with the accounting officer and working towards addressing some of the issues. That brings me to the conclusion of Mthupatuba Municipality, highlighting that there is still a need for a continuation of this intervention. At Msunduzi Municipality, we talked to the original intervention triggers. It's an intervention that commenced in 2019. At the time, there were dysfunctional ward committees and public protests. National Treasury had stopped funds. There was a failure to resolve service delivery challenges. Issues of waste management and electricity and roads maintenance were serious problems. There was underspending on the on operations and maintenance, and very frequent electricity outages. That's pre-ESCOM load shedding. So those were challenges of service delivery in particular. Also, from a good governance point of view, there was a failure to implement consequence management, hold councillors accountable, and a failure to investigate allegations of maladministration, fraud, and corruption. Financial management, the municipality had received an adverse audit opinion, and there was poor financial management at the time. The municipality had an overdraft, and UIFW had also not been addressed. There's failure to institute consequence management against managers and officials responsible for UIFW and other maladministration. And there was suspension and dismissal of certain senior managers as well. There has been significant progress made at Msunduzi. The ward committees are functional. 40 out of the 41 ward committees are functional. That's 98%. The infrastructure grants are now being spent, and most of the service delivery related issues have been fairly resolved. The municipality has also placed priority on service delivery and allocated sufficient budget for repairs and maintenance. So the norm is 8%, and they have allocated 7%, which is one of the higher allocations in the province. The Section 106 report, which the MEC had undertook following the allegations of maladministration, fraud and corruption, was dealt with, and it was tabled in council in 2020 with 17 recommendations. 15 recommendations were implemented, with only two outstanding. There was a further Section 106 report undertaken in 2021 with 27 recommendations, and four recommendations have been implemented with 16 in progress. So these are areas that we still require intense support on at the municipality, and we are achieving, we are receiving cooperation, so the matters are in progress. The financial management situation has improved. The municipality audit opinion, although we're saying in the last year regressed to qualified, it had an unqualified audit opinion in 2021, and then in 2022 it regressed to a qualified audit opinion on the basis of the financial management system not reflecting assets correctly. That matter, we believe, through our support at the municipality, has been resolved. There is still, poor financial management has been addressed, so there is no overdraft. The cash coverage has slightly improved, but it is still below the norm. And there are creditors, so the municipality is owing Eskom an amount of almost 400 million rand, and Umgeni Water approximately 500 million. So that does point to some financial challenges, and it's on the area of collection by the municipality. So significant efforts have been put towards improving this area. A revenue enhancement plan has been developed, and we are seeing implementation and improvement. There are vacancies of deputy municipal managers in the area of electricity, community and sustainable development and city services, which processes are in progress. Chairperson, a lot of progress has been made at Msunduzi, but a few issues remain persistent, and we hope that in the next short while, probably in the next 6 months, we will be able to exit Msunduzi municipality. Umkhanyakude District Municipality is the other municipality under intervention, and the triggers were community protests, underspending of grant funding for service delivery, significant political instability, breakdown of meetings, lack of consequence management, maladministration, fraud and corruption. Also at the time, precarious cash flow, poor audit outcomes, and there was the CFO was dismissed, also dismissed at the time, and with financial the financial state of the municipality, that was a crisis as well. The municipality has stabilized somewhat. The as the MEC has indicated, the rapid response is effective in terms of dealing with service delivery protests. The MIG expenditure was at 76%, so still low. This is on the basis of lack of capacity in the technical unit of the municipality. There has also been an intervention by the National Minister of Water Affairs in terms of the Water Services Act. So we have joint collaborative efforts to turn it around as far as water service delivery is concerned. And we are working closely with MISA and other stakeholders, including the Umgeni Umhlathuze Water Board, to address the matter. The investigation in terms of Section 106 of the Systems Act was tabled at Council in March 2022 with 29 recommendations, and only 10 have been implemented at this stage. Financial viability of the municipality remains precarious. Although the budget is funded, the collection rate of the municipality is only 35.9%. So it remains poor, extremely poor. Creditors now are paid on time, so we have stabilized. We've improved the current ratio to come within the norm, and through the adjustment budget and implementation of cost containment, we are managing finances. UIFW, however, remains a serious challenge at this municipality, and it is sitting at 6.3 billion rand based on the unaudited financial statements. It started at the time of intervention at 2.7 billion. What happened during the intervention through our ministerial representatives, we uncovered probably an additional 3 billion rand of UIFW through multi-year contracts that were irregular, which had not followed, were in breach of SCM processes. And we then brought those into the books of the municipality. We are now addressing the UIFW with the council of the municipality. A UIFW intervention plan has been developed, and the municipality has now written off 470 million rand based on investigations that were undertaken dating as far back as 2010. There were four investigations that as a department we reviewed, we prepared items to MPAC, we took it through to MPAC, we conducted training and provided hands-on support to deal with that. We will also see an additional 500 million write-off of unauthorized expenditure by December, so at least 15% of the UIFW would have been addressed by the end of the year, and we are starting to make progress in that particular area. We will still, however, deal with the control environment going forward. The MR has appointed the acting CFO because it was a contentious issue and the failure by council to appoint the CFO. The MR also appointed the municipal manager and the director of community services, and the CFO and the director of corporate and director of planning services remain vacant, but processes are underway with the municipality now having advertised those posts for filling. So Mkhanyakule District Municipality remains under intervention and will hopefully continue to make improvements under the leadership and guidance of the province. The approach adopted by the department is to intensify the kind of support that is provided to intervention municipalities. Our MSC has called for a more hands-on approach with intervention meetings that include all stakeholders. What we found is that there is a need, particularly in areas of service delivery, to call relevant sector departments and state-owned enterprises to come and be part of the intervention. So we needed more collaboration, better intergovernmental relations, and more engagement at a municipal level to turn things around. And we are finding that these issues, this approach is assisting ministerial representatives and the department to deal with some extremely difficult service delivery issues in particular. There are critical also intervention steering committees that are chaired by the MEC with the affected mayors and speakers. So the drive to ensure that political leadership are held accountable and that accountability becomes the order of the day in council structures as well. And this enhances the oversight by the MEC over these political structures, and obviously also helps to unblock political challenges. I think the dynamic in KZN, the political dynamic, warrants us to make sure that we are keen, keep a keen eye on what is required of us in law, and that we are not detracted by political issues. So the intervention and the approach by the MEC has really ensured that mayors in particular and expos are able to do that. We've also, to improve the monitoring of and implementation of recovery plans, we've entered into performance agreements with ministerial representatives. We are monitoring their progress and providing support where necessary so that they are also not isolated on the ground. We've also assisted by providing technical support to ministerial representatives, so we believe now that there's a team that is necessary to deal with different focal areas. So while the ministerial representative is overall responsible for the project management, coordination, stakeholder management of the recovery plans, he or she does have support insofar as dealing with the governance issues, financial issues, technical issues as well. The MEC also assesses the performance of ministerial representatives, and we've included as an example the fact that UIFW must be one of those target areas that we focus on. And we also, with each review of the intervention, also review the performance of the ministerial representative. I think the MEC has alluded to some of the challenges that we already have, the legal challenges that we encounter from time to time, and the call for the legal framework, both for the intervention process as well as the need for the MEC to have some measure of enforcement as far as Section 106 investigation reports are concerned. Really, we are entirely dependent on municipal councils and municipal administrations to implement the findings of recommendations. And sometimes these processes take far too long and are not dealt with as urgently as they should be. So the enforcement measures will certainly assist the Provincial Executive Council, and of course this Portfolio Committee can assist us in this regard. Also, we're looking at the framework for regulating MRs, as the MEC has indicated, and we have improved oversight we are hoping to improve political oversight by councils and portfolio committees in the province. The cost of legal challenge is clearly an issue and delays the implementation of the support that that we are required. I think the understanding is there that local government is a separate sphere, and from time to time, you know, they, even though they may be under intervention, they do not enjoy the intervention, and so we find that there is an increasing number of challenge and cost added. We trust that the committee notes that we've implemented, as the MEC highlighted, the early warning systems, that we make a call to you, honourable members, to assist us with strengthening the legal framework, that there is, in your minds, after this presentation, no doubt that the 7 municipalities that remain under intervention still require the
recording stopped.
And this was illustrated by the negative opinions. The 3 intervention municipalities, namely Mpofana, Uthukela, and Umsunduzi, as I made my presentation, I pointed to the fact that they met the criteria for interventions in terms of Section 139(5) of the Constitution, and that is to impose financial recovery plans on these municipalities. And these are the only 3 of the 7 that have unfunded budgets as well. So we want the committee to note that. We will process these matters, and we have already engaged with the Treasury in this regard. The processes, as indicated, were underway for the extension of the interventions, and we will revert in through correspondence to the relevant ministers and structures once the Provincial Executive Council has dealt with it. Thank you, honourable members.
Thank you very much for the presentation. MEC, Honourable MEC, do you have any concluding words before we engage with the presentation? Or are you okay?
I mentioned that my opening remarks is that these 7 municipalities, we should continue with the intervention until we are certain that they have recovered from all the pillars that we have identified. Secondly, also that we will also plead with the committee also to be with us in ensuring that we move these 3 municipalities and add Section 139(5). We're hoping that they will assist as well because they have unfunded budgets. And We'll have to impose the recovery and also
your line is very bad. Let me see. You keep on cutting. Your line is very bad. We don't hear you well. Be that as it may, honorable members, this is the presentation. It was extensive, it was elaborate, and it gave us the picture, it gave us a picture about the work that the province of KZN has done in the municipalities where it invoked Section 139B of the Constitution. And it proposes certain measures that needs to be taken to strengthen that particular area. Let's engage with the presentation. I have so many questions. I hope that members also have so many issues and questions to raise. What we are going to do is that we have time and we must engage with the presentation. I'll give one member an opportunity to raise issues and ask questions. We get a response. We go to the next member, we get a response until all members have asked their questions and I indeed satisfied with the responses given. Over to you, honorable members. Any hand? I see one hand, honorable Shay.
Thank you very much, honorable Chaperson. And if I can just request that I switch off my video more for my bandwidth. Chair, once again, thank you very much. Let me also take this opportunity to thank the MEC as well as the team that's with her with regard to the presentation that was made to us, which I think, it was they cleared quite a few matters for me. Chair, I just have maybe a few questions. The one maybe is with regard to the fact that where they've instituted forensic investigations, what I would want to know is when will they table these forensic investigation reports, as well as give us an indication on the status of criminal cases and or prosecution. Chair, in addition to that, obviously interventions, I think as early as 2016, 2017 and 2018, which the MEC had also made reference to, that they have been long in progress. But I think the presentation also does indicate that there's quite a bit of work that still needs to be done in these municipalities. However, especially with these old interventions, Chair, unlike what was indicated to us with regard to Msunduzi, where the department was quite clear that in the next 6 months they would exit or the intervention would end. But perhaps the question is, like, in terms of their planning, when do they expect to terminate the interventions and when will they table termination report? Chair, with Utukela District, I didn't get, maybe I missed it, Chair, I just wanted to know what is the audit status of that municipality. I'm not sure. Well, I understand that they have an unfunded budget, but I didn't hear what the audit statement or the status of that municipality is. Then, Chair, just one other issue which relates to a UIFW, I understand that the impacts and or the audit committees or the financial management issues in the municipalities vary. But what I would like to know is what is actually happening in these municipalities in relation to consequence management? If they can maybe tell us what is going on there. And just one more question, Shepherdson, perhaps with regard to what was raised in Utukela district, where it was mentioned that there was an intervention renewal. Maybe just clarity, Chair, in terms of procedure around that. Those are the questions from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Sheikh. Can you respond to the questions by Honourable Sheikh, please?
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson. My name is Han Ani, the accounting officer for COP KZN. Well, good morning to yourself, good morning to the honourable members, morning to the MEC, morning to the Deputy Minister, morning to all the colleagues. The process that we normally follow when we table this Section 106 report is that after the conclusion of the investigation, we convene a council meeting whereby we table the report. Obviously, it would have recommendations. And after that, we would give the municipality what we call a 21-day letter, where we say we have tabled the report. We ask you in 21 days' time to give us your action plan as to how you're going to be responding to these recommendations. We keep the track then of those implementations or the progress thereof. But we must indicate that we often get resistance, albeit not very overt in terms of implementing this forensic, where you would find that sometimes the municipality would want to find reasons why certain recommendations cannot be carried through. So it's one of the challenges we often get. Number two, sometimes we refer some of these matters, or we implore or we direct a council to open criminal cases. Sometimes we would compel them to, when we see that we don't see a movement in that regard. I know in certain instances, Umsunduzi, Umzinyati, as well as Mkanyabude, there are criminal cases that were opened. I know for a fact that in some of the instances we did interact with the SIU, we did interact with the municipal with other law enforcement agencies to try and see movement with regards to some of the matters that would have been raised during the intervention. So the application or the implementation of recommendations arising out of 106 vary in various instances, but we do apply a little bit of pressure where we see that there is no movement. The second question would be, when do we terminate? When do we expect to terminate the intervention? The approach that we have adopted was that after the expiry of the intervention, we would go and request a 6-month intervention. But in many of these instances, that's what the MEC was also talking to me about, and said maybe we may need to even review this 6-month period, maybe to give it a longer period than 6. because history, as you would see, that some of these interventions have been instituted years back, but the results really are not really what we would anticipate. I think in short, we normally do a 6-month review processes. But I think the presentation did indicate that despite the triggers that would have called for the intervention, you would find that once you undertake the intervention, there are emerging issues that keep on coming. For an example, when we intervened in Umtubatuba and in Nkosilanga Lebalele, we didn't anticipate the municipalities, both municipalities, engaging in frivolous and sometimes vexatious litigation that was very unwarranted. We spent a lot of time in court dealing with litigation, which in our view was unnecessary and which was not the trigger for the intervention. Utugela, the audit outcome, they are sitting at qualified. And at qualified audit opinion, as well as the issue of consequence management. It varies from time to time. And
okay, I've solved it.
Okay. Consequence management, Chair, varies. There is progress, really, in some of these municipalities. As you would see, especially in Umsunduzi, you see that there is consequence management framework that they apply. You would go again in Umkhanyavute. But there are areas where we even push for the invocation of disciplinary measures. It varies from municipality to the other. I think those would be my responses to the Honourable Member, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much for the response. Honourable Sheikh, are you okay?
Okay, I'm coming for now. Perhaps let other members ask questions. If I have anything pending, I'll come back.
No problem. The next member would be Honourable Mbali Dlamini.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also like to request to keep my camera off. Chair, can I proceed?
Proceed.
Thank you very much. I just want to find out that there was a mention that council is compliant in some municipalities, and I think it was mentioned in Utugela that there's compliance when it comes to council seatings, but the problem is that there's not much of an impact from those council meetings. So council meetings are more for compliance than they are for an oversight role to make sure that different departments are effective in that regard. So I want to know if there any other stakeholders that you work with in terms of enhancing the skills of councillors, what have been the programs that have been put in place in order to then make councillors understand what is their role and what is it, what powers do they have in the different committees that they occupy. Then my next question would be, after the protest actions, what have been the engagement of the community? So where are we now in terms of community stability, and what is the public participation enhancement strategies that have been put in place? Then my next question would be, what is the morale of staff members in all these municipalities? Because we can have all legislative frameworks of what needs to happen, but if those who are intended to implement it are not brought on board, and what is their morale? Has there been any assessment in that? And what is their willingness to turn around these strategies? Because sometimes I feel we would put more emphasis, and which we should, from councillors, and then leave behind the staff complement that comes with municipalities. And then have there been a skills audit as well in those municipalities that have an overbloated staff complement? So are there people occupying positions that they do not qualify for? And what are the strategies around to work around that as to how to then eliminate those unnecessary staff complements that are overbloating the system? And any of the resistance that you have found through your interventions, have any of them been violent towards you? What is the status of your the safety around those who try to implement, so we get the litigation of court, but understanding the politics of KwaZulu-Natal as well, I think it's important that we ask is that in terms of safety, where are we in regards to that? And those are my questions for now, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mbali Dlamini. Over to you, MEC or HOD.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Dlamini, for the question you posed. I think we are making a point that without proper council oversight and without proper, I think, oversight in the main, we shouldn't be sitting where we are now in this municipality. Because one of the indicators of weak council structures as well as oversight is when municipalities descend. Hello, Chair?
We can hear you.
It's when councils descend now to the states where they have to be placed in under intervention. We make a point and we say, yes, you can have as many council meetings, but what is the impact of those meetings? What kind of decisions that are taken in those councils? And we hold a view that much as council meetings could be held, but the degree in terms of effectiveness, in terms of oversight, varies in various municipalities. So we don't measure the council by the number of meetings it has, but we also look into what becomes of that municipality in terms of its governance, finances, and service delivery. And then we come to a conclusion that you are not playing your oversight, even in your committees or in council meetings. What did we do then with regards to alerting this municipality that there are challenges? Yeah, immediately when council, after the local government elections, we detail a prolonged training program, which we also did in this instance. We did it on our own, and in some of the training programs, we did with the School of Government, of Government, as well as SALGA, to say, now that you are in this new role, and these roles come with responsibilities, we take them through legislation. We even buy them a booklet, all the laws that affect local government. We put a pack, we give to each and every council. What other intervention have we done for these municipalities under intervention? We say, much as we have training of all councillors, but let's also zoom now into the training programs for municipalities under intervention, which is ongoing. From time to time, we'd invite, we'd call them, and we even ask what support in terms of training you require from the department. How do we engage communities? We established a unit in the department called public participation. It has got a directorate, a chief director, and various directors. Whenever there is a protest that comes to the attention of the department, we would deploy our colleagues. We have also activated all municipalities. They have got in the province municipal rapid response teams, so that when there are protests, we are there. We interact with the communities. We also have a tripartite meeting where we invite the municipality, we invite the protesters, and we invite other stakeholders like other government departments. For an example, if the issue is about housing, we'll bring in human settlement. And we will craft what we will refer to as a response plan to the marchers or to the protesters. And we would say, each and every one of us who has got a responsibility to resolve the protesters are crying about, what intervention are you going to provide? And we try and coordinate those. So that is an extent, really, which the department has tried to try and mitigate against the various protests. The morale of our staff, I think, Honorable Dlamini, I'll take your point, that maybe let our focus not be in the main with the councillors. Have we checked the morale of staff insofar as what pertains? I think that is one element that we will seriously consider and try and improve on. We in the main rely on the local labor forum and what is happening. We monitor, we see it, we come closer to it. But I think your question is far beyond the local labor forum as to check the staff morale. I think we will try and come with an intervention. Regarding the skills audit, in 2022, we conducted an overall skills audit in the department, in the province, in all 54 municipalities. We did that with all councillors. We also did with all employees in the municipal space. It's a report that became topical not so long ago, which I think was misrepresented in the media for what it was, but we are not there. What is happening is that once we conducted the skills audit for both councillors as well as municipalities, we then send our team to all 54 municipalities to go and table the results in the municipal council. And we said to them, you have got your workplace skills plan. Integrate the recommendations that come out of the report from the skills audit, integrate that into a plan, fund the training needs, because we have been able to assess that here are the weaknesses from your councillors, here are the weaknesses from your staff. And what do we do then in between? We go and monitor the progress or the implementation of those reports that flow from your workplace skills plan. That is the task we have given our colleagues under capacity building to say, now, roll out these training initiatives arising out of the skills project. The issues of violence, it is real, Jefferson. Even last night, there was a special executive council where we're discussing the issues of intervention. Members of the Executive Council did raise sharply with us the question of securing everyone at the municipal space, and also to provide foolproof security for our ministerial representatives. They have been given a runaround in some of the municipalities, like Mtubatuba, Inkosi Langalibalele, as well as Uthukela. We had to go to court to affirm their presence in two municipalities, Mtubatuba as well as Nkosi Langalibalele. We were approaching the court on Tugela when we were called by the municipality to say, okay, they are going to allow the ministerial rep to participate in the activities, because we made a point. We said these interventions are not yours. They are the executive council. We have reported these interventions in all these oversight committees as we are doing today. So the question of violence is real, Jefferson. It's real, Honorable Dlamini. And we are taking steps as the department to try and ensure that all the stakeholders involved in this get the necessary protection. Thank you, Jefferson.
I don't see the chair on the platform.
Hello, Chair. Yes, I'm there. I was speaking alone, not speaking on the phone. Yes, the next one is Honorable Bea Smith.
Thank you very much, Chair. For the sake of the bandwidth, I'm also not going to switch on my video. Chair, my first question would be, with all these interventions in KZN, can the department indicate to us in each of the different interventions if there was any criminal cases or disciplinary actions taken or installed in any of those circumstances for misconduct? Secondly, I would like to hear from the department, with each one of these interventions, what was the cost to appoint administrators in each one of these interventions? And then in the same breath, I would like to know, what was on what basis is it determined whether such an intervention is actually successful or not? So what measures are used to determine whether such intervention was successful? And if that is explained also, how many of these interventions were actually successful in essence? Then I want to know, in terms of the timing of intervention, the Auditor General indicated to us earlier in the year that she found that most interventions are, as she said, a little too late, where the situation got so bad that it is a municipality so damaged by mismanagement and all the things that go with it, that by the time the intervention comes in, it's too expensive. And there's no ability to actually fix such a mess within the period of intervention that is allowed within in the time period of intervention. So I just want a comment from the department in terms of whether they think that the interventions are in fact in time. And whether it is actually, is it in the current framework of the law, is it really effective, these interventions, and worth the money that is being spent on administrators? So this is just an overhead question I have about interventions in general. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Honorable Smith. Response, please.
My hand is off.
Don't worry, Honorable Samai, I'll come to you.
Honorable Chair, if I may respond to Honorable Bear Smith, the cost of the intervention, we remunerate the ministerial rep between the band, between the level of director and chief director. It is their remuneration band. We also provide, in certain instances, additional support staff to them in the form of your governance experts who would work with them, technical expertise which the department would provide. For an example, in Kanyangu, they would together work with engineers that are brought by the department to come and support the municipality. Sometimes we provide finance experts in these municipalities, the majority of whom here are beneficiaries. So that is an associated cost that we would provide. And of course, the last one being the security cost of the ministerial reps, because of the threats and the situation that they always find themselves of in municipalities, because sometimes they are seen as those people who are not supposed to be in the municipality, and hostility will be directed at them. As we have seen, I did make a point about Nkosilang Albalele, about the Utugela and Umtubatuba. Some of us camped in this municipality to say, but on what basis would you want the ministerial rep and gone? Because we've got a valid executive council resolution, and in certain instances we were carrying court orders. We had to bring policemen with us to come and force our way through because of the hostile attitude that we received in some of these municipalities. There are criminal cases that were opened. We know of in Utugela, there are criminal cases. Unfortunately, we didn't provide the case numbers. Umzinyati, there are criminal cases. Umkanyabute, there are criminal cases. Umsunduzi, there are criminal cases. Umdubatuba, there are criminal cases. Those we know of, they have been opened, and the police are following up on those. Cases of misconduct is the same. We have seen it in Umkanyabute. We have seen it in Moimpofana. We have seen it in Umsunduzi. I think Umsunduzi is leading them with regard to a disciplinary matter by members of staff. When do we know then that it's the time to exit the intervention? Really, as our presentation did show, that we benchmark the interventions in terms of pillars, and if those triggers that brought the municipality under Section 139 have been met, we are quick then to say, let's pull out. But as we have indicated, that one of the challenges is that you would find that there is progress with the implementation or addressing the trigger. But as you are in the municipality, you begin to uncover a lot of other matters which originally were not part of the scope, which we cannot leave out by virtue of us having been there. So, but if really everything is well, we do pull out as we have done in other municipalities, like in Dumeni and others, which were in the under interventions, and we pulled out when we felt there was progress. The timing of the interventions is always an issue, because sometimes when there are triggers, even when there is Section 154, because our starting point would always be your Section 154. then we would try and intensify our 154 support. But in many instances, it gets often ignored because 154 works on the basis of consensus and mutual agreement by both parties. Whereas the interventions by its very nature is an intervention. Sometimes you don't need the concurrence by the municipality where you would want to intervene on. It differs really from time to time because there are certain instances where you won't have even played a significant amount of Section 154. I'll make an example by one incident in Moembo Fund. There was a year where we didn't even go for 139 1P. We went for C because the environment was so toxic in the institution. You would see the mayor leading protests against the municipality. You would see then N3, which is a corridor between Gauteng and KZN, completely brought to a standstill by municipal council. Then we had to step in and say, no, here, 154 or no 154. The situation is so dire that it requires a strong action, and that action must be taken as we did, and to try and normalize the situation. We called for elections, which we did. The situation has never been the same, though this municipality now is still under intervention, but the circumstances are much better than when we put this municipality under Section 139-1-SC. I think those are the responses, Chair. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are you okay, Honorable?
I've got some follow-ups, Chair, if you allow me.
Yes, please.
Right. I would like you to quantify in terms of the cost, because you mentioned different support that's given, that's all got cost implications. So if you can give us a range of cost, per month that is spent in such intervention. Then I would like to know, when you intervene, because that's the challenge that we have, is the intervention happens, and then the situation is stabilized, but it seems that there's no capacity because you're bringing capacity in, and then once you pull out, that capacity leaves with you. So then it's just a matter of time before it goes back to where it was before, where things are not happening correctly. And I've basically got two questions on this. Is number one is, in terms of the district municipalities where that's applicable, are they really effective in terms of supporting local municipalities in supplying capacity? And I almost want to answer that question and say I don't think so, because it seems that that support is not coming from district municipalities. So how are we making sure that the capacity is given at that level, so that local municipalities don't need to wait for intervention but have got that constant support? The second part of the question would be, in terms of legislation, the current legislative framework in terms of interventions, don't you think it is time that we look at this legislation in guiding us in having much better, intervention structure in place, so that it does not get to a level where it is totally destroyed and cannot be fixed? Thank you.
Response, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. If I were to start with the last response, where we're saying the legislation, I think the have had absent, this space has not been really canvassed in terms of legislation. It's only now that I'm sure the members of the of Parliament would know that there is a bill probably before Parliament to consider the intervention framework. Because what has been happening in our experience is that each province would apply its own approach to intervention. I think that is why maybe as you play oversight, you will find that different countries apply Section 139 intervention differently. Their interpretation to some extent differs, their methodology, it differs. We are hoping then once the bill becomes law, there will be an element of certainty and of similarity when it comes to the issues of intervention.
What about
that? Are districts effective in supporting municipalities? My answer would be no. For this reason, if you were to take Umkhanyakude, you take Mzinyathi, which is a district as well, you take Umdubadube. They are mired in their own serious challenges to an extent then that it becomes difficult for them to be able to effectively support the locals under the family of municipalities in their areas of jurisdiction. I think that's my simplest and straightforward answer, in that you will not find them playing the role of coordination and the role of support to locals effectively, because they've got their own challenges that they're faced with. Interventions, when they stabilize, you know, we often, I always say to colleagues, we don't run municipalities. Municipalities are run by councils who are elected to run those municipalities. Really, when we come in as an intervention, it's not a desirable space to find yourself in. What also delays this intervention, we bring in support, I agree. We will try and fast-track the appointment of managers. Because you would find one municipality without a CFO, without a municipal manager, without a technical services manager. And the support that you bring in really will get there without these critical officials not in office. That's why we're saying the level of support and the level of what we bring in a municipality differs because of these various circumstances. As we have said, that you know the level of certain municipalities taking time to recruit or to fill posts. We have even gone to the Executive Council and requested directives in terms of Section 139(1)(a), where we say, but we must push this municipality to fill in these vacancies, because you can't have a functional institution without the accounting officer, without a CFO, without a technical services manager. So we work in that space, and we try and do with what we have. The quantification of cost, I think I did try to indicate that the administrators or the MRs are paid between the salary band, I think it's level 13 or level 13 and level 14 of the DPSA rate. We also use, if we are bringing in a governance expert who's not necessarily coming from the municipal, from the department, or a financial expert, we use the rate as determined by DPSA again, which deal with those with the appointment of those service providers or individuals who will be providing that specialist support. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The next one will be Honorable Sansla Hadev.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Greetings to all the honorable members and the MEC and the senior official from COCTA. Honorable Chairperson, my question relates to the fact that as it has been alluded to, that the provincial government, in terms of Section 139, is empowered to intervene when a municipality cannot or does not fulfill its executive obligation in terms of the constitution. My question then is, we have seen more often than not COCTA giving this responsibility to former municipal employees. Some were municipal managers, some were holding other positions in municipalities in their previous life of administration. But you would find COCTA appointing them as ministerial representatives. My question then is, what outcome are we expecting if people who have been either been expelled or suspended, perhaps for failing to perform their duties, are given a task to turn things around in municipalities? And secondly, are these municipal ministerial representatives subjected to performance monitoring and evaluation themselves on their tasks to see if they are able to assist municipalities with turnaround strategies? Lastly, this point talks to the previous point that I've just mentioned, the issue of recycling these ministerial representatives, moving them from one municipality to another municipality. Thank you so much, Charles.
If I can respond to Honorable Hadebe's question, it is true that we do draw from the ranks of former accounting officers in municipalities in the name of municipal managers. We do. Why do we do that? They know the state. They would have been practitioners. And you won't need more time to integrate them or to make them understand system of local government. I always say to colleagues in the department, I may have been fortunate to have served in local government before I came and joined the provincial department. And you find the complexity of local government, which at times is not appreciated by the provincial and level, as well as national level, by some of the officers, because it is such a complex space. Really where you've got multiple tasks are looking at you as an accounting officer, even the mayor. That's why then we say, who could be best placed to support us. We have also in our team recruited former heads of departments in this province. We have had three former heads of departments whose contracts were not renewed by provincial government. We brought them in to come and provide support in municipalities. And we gave them the support. That's why we were saying we provided them with the additional support. We've got our own COFTA officials who go to these municipalities to give support. Over and above, we provide other specialist support to deal with specific instances that pertaining to municipalities. Performance contracts, every appointed ministerial rep signs up performance contracts with the MC. All of them have got their performance contracts. We monitor the terms of those contracts. And sometimes we change the MR. We say maybe you would be better placed in this municipality, because at times a personality can make or break an intervention. So it's not that probably one is recycling them, but we're saying maybe if you were to go to that municipality, you'll give us the kind of results that we want faster and better than this, because of how we differ in handling various situations. We do provide, I think I indicated, and that we do provide a support in various ways of the department. And yeah, I think those are my responses. So,
Honorable Hadebe,
can you follow up?
Are you okay?
Yes. I'm okay, Honorable Chairperson.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, I take that.
All right, thank you very much. Honorable Mosamai. Honorable Mosamai.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I would like to ask the question in regarding to these municipalities that we find sometimes they are facing very serious corruption cases. And I ask myself, what's happening with the councillors that are being involved direct or indirect on these cases, and they are taking so long, treated with a soft glove? We cannot see them appear before the court of law. After doing some oversight visit, we find municipalities like Matubaduba, Mzunduzi, and those municipalities, we don't see anyone appearing to court. What's happening with this? Or is because they are feared? Because if they want to make a corruption, want to fight the people. I remember when we were visited one municipality, they didn't even want to allow us, NCOP, to enter. They will find the security. They didn't want to allow us to come inside. Instead to allow us, they wanted even to search us. So I want to know, what makes it so difficult for these municipalities to face justice? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mutamai. Response, please.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we use an instrument in terms of Section 106 when we do the investigation. And we also do provide the report of that to NCOP, where we report on what would have transpired. I think Honorable Mutamai is the frustration you are sharing is commonly shared by us, because there is no provision in Section 106 instrument that could compel the MEC or anyone in the department to enforce the implementation of the recommendation. There is nothing in the law in terms of Section 106. And we have been making this cry that maybe something must be done to give this to Section 106, because what it only does is an MEC, when you suspect there's maladministration, fraud or corruption, do this investigation and it ends there. So what we normally do when we find that there are cases that require, that are of criminal nature, we refer them to the police. But that's the only option that we have. What happens then with the police? It is difficult for us to respond to. But what we know is that some of these cases take time to conclude, because we would have provided evidence in our own space. We would have provided evidence that our Section 106 requires this. And we have been engaging with the police criminal offenses division. We have been engaging with SIU. But these are the reports, act on them. But beyond that, Chair, I think we are not really empowered to take this matter further beyond raising this in portfolio committees and to the law enforcement agency. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I see the hand of Honorable Rikers Vandenhorst. I guess he's the last one before I come in. Over to you, Honorable Vandenhorst.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to keep my video off just for my bandwidth. I guess the qualifications of the MMs comes out in skills audits, and I guess that's been addressed to an extent by some of the questions asked. But I mean that for me would be crucial in the MMs being the accounting officers and responsible for that administration in municipalities. It's one thing to have oversight from a political point of view, but if the MMs don't know how to do their job, they don't know how to do their job. So that would be, I think, one of the biggest issues. I think that I need to get just 100% clarity. Has that been addressed? It's also clear that administration has taken place and that the administration hasn't worked. So if administration, in terms of Section 139C, if a municipal council is dissolved and there's an administrator and it's appointed and it doesn't work, what are the alternatives? What do we do next? I'd just like to get some clarity on that. Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you very much, Honorable Butterworth. Response, please.
If you'll correct me, Honorable Badenos, if I failed to appreciate your question. But you seem to suggest in an instance when you dissolve a municipality, the next step would be to reconstitute after 90 days. And you would have a new council, which you must support, because what we normally do, one, we dissolve, we assist in the reconstitution, as well as to ensure that the council does operate. And if it happens that you intensify your support, because you have got your new council now, so to say, in the midterm, because you would go for by-elections. But what we normally do, as we did, I think in two instances, it was Motu, at one stage, and the other one was more Mpofana, where we did, we come and support. But if it becomes, even the newly reconstituted council falling in the same route as the other one, you would do the support. If support fails, you would do your 139, one, A or B. If it comes to C, you go for C again. But I'm sure it will attract a wider engagement and debate to say, but what is it that is so wrong here in the municipality? The employment of MM or senior managers is regulated now. What happens is that once the appointment is confirmed by the municipal council, they will send it to the MEC for her concurrence, and then the MEC will advise the minister. So all those that we feel have been appointment are outside the regulations which were passed by DCOG, we would go back to municipalities, as we all always do. The MEC will say, no, we are not going to concur with this appointment, and we ask you to restart or to satisfy myself on the issues that the MEC will separate. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, HLB. Are you okay, Honorable Barenas? Are you fine?
Yeah, thanks, Chief.
All right, thank you very much. Let me also take a bite. I'm not going to really ask questions. I'm going to make some comments, and I would like you to respond to those comments that I would have made. Firstly, Honorable MEC and HOD, 7 years is too much to place a municipality under administration. 7 years is too much for me. It's unacceptable. What is your comment on that? It's really, really an unacceptable. Why are you taking powers on municipalities? And there can only be one way and one reason. And the reason is because they are unable to fulfill their executive obligations under the Constitution or any law, and you take the powers. It means for 7 years, when you have taken powers from a municipality, you still can't resolve the problem because you are there for over 7 years. Now the question is, if you do that, why did you do that in the first place if yourself can stay in a municipality for 7 years? For me, it's really unacceptable. Maybe the problem is with you more than it is with the municipality, because here you are from 2016, you are in a municipality, you can't resolve the problem that led you to invoking Section 139 of the Constitution. No matter the reasons that you're advancing, 7 years is quite a long time. And Section 139, it is a drastic intervention against a municipality which has been democratically elected. And now this is worse because this municipality that was elected in 2016, it was for a 5-year period, 2021, and you're still keeping those powers with you as a provincial government. And it is the next municipality that is democratically elected, and you are still in that municipality under the new council. I don't know, I'm asking myself sitting here, that when you take powers or intervene in terms of Section 139, what was your intention? Was it there to stay for a year, 6 months, 2 years? I don't remember at any given point the NCOP approving an intervention which would last for more than 2 years. And you continue doing that. Beyond 2 years, that was granted by the NCOP. Do you go back to the NCOP and say, you gave us 2 years. We have not completed our task because our task is complex, is complicated, is difficult. We need an extension. This committee has not been seized with any extension from your side, despite the fact that the NCOP has given you 2 years to finalize what you could say finalize. And then for me, the difficulty is that the issue doesn't come out very clear as to what is the actual reason that impedes you from completing. No matter the complex problem that you are raising, now the next question would be, would you blame people who say these interventions are not working because you can stay there for 7 years in a municipality? And this is what some people are saying, even members in this committee have said that you take failures. People who do not have a demonstrable evidence of performance, of success, of turnaround, you place them in that municipality. I don't know, I'm asking myself, if a person charge you and say, you take failures because you can't complete, who do blame such people to say that, when they say that to you? My other concern is that, and this is a question that one honourable member, I think Honourable Sheikh and Honourable Smith asked. How much have you spent for this intervention? And I think we must settle that one. Let's settle it here. Settling it here is that in 2 weeks, this committee must be furnished with a report of how much you have spent for each intervention. And I heard HOD mentioning that the intervention encapsulate paying a provincial representative, additional staff, it is there, their security arrangement. For me, just sitting here listening to you, this is quite a substantial amount of money that you pay for turnaround, for intervention to a municipality. And it would seem to me, at least, and I want to counter that, it would seem to me that the results are not showing, are not coming, that yes, this is value for money, this is what we're spending, for a person to do the work or the team to do their work. But the fact of the matter is, you report here today is that there are interventions which have been there for 7 years, and take into account the fact that we have not given you any extension or approved that you must go beyond the 2 years that you have requested. And just sitting here listening to you, my other concern is, you review this after every 6 months. 6 months is a lot of time. Remember, this is an intervention. It's an extraordinary intervention. It's an extraordinary effort on a municipality that is in a crisis, where you intervene, and you can only review after 6 months. This is your way. This is what you've just told the committee. I don't agree with that. I don't think, with due respect, this is a way to go. Because this review must be constant, must be punctual, must be always, because you need to get into a municipality and get out. Because this municipality has been democratically elected. The people who serve in the council have been democratically elected, like we are elected as members of parliament, like members of the provincial legislature are elected, or MECs, all of us are elected. And for me, there must be a compelling case, really, a justifiable reason why would you stay in a municipality in a sphere of government that is democratically elected and stay for such a long time? Isn't it encroaching on the powers of the municipalities? Isn't it interfering in the powers of the elected council? Because in terms of Section Chapter 3 of our constitution that deals with cooperative governance. We say all the spheres of government, national, provincial, and local, will be distinctive, will be interdependent, will be interrelated. And they are spheres, they are not tiers, which means that there is no big brother here. They work in a mutual inclusive way in respect of the powers and functions allocated to each sphere of government by the Constitution of the Republic. And staying for such a long time, for me, is really unjustifiable no matter the reasons that you can advance. And what doesn't come out here, as I said, is that how much of you spend per municipality, and I think we're noting it now, to say when we go to council to present the report, we must say for each municipality, this is how much we have spent, and on what, and how much we've paid every provincial representative, how much have you paid every staff, how much have you paid for security of every person who is attached to your municipality. Maybe we must reach that point so that this must be a way of enforcing accountability and reporting quite properly to municipalities. I argue that we need to do something in order to get our municipalities working and to get our provincial government accountable in a proper way. Because this money that we're spending is public money from the provincial government that we spend to your municipality. And I became very worried, I must say, when you were saying, we have reported this to the law enforcement agencies. We have reported this to SIU, to the Hawks and everywhere. And nothing is coming up. And there's little, in your own word, with due respect, HOD, in your own word, you say, there's nothing that we can do. The only thing that you can do is to pump in money. Is to pump in money on a project that is not sustainable, that is not yielding positive results, that is not coming to an end. And like I asked the question, do you really have time frames when you place a municipality under administration that by this time we should have finished? And if we have not finished, what is it that we need to do ourselves? Because what is quite clear from where I sit is that we have given you 2 years to complete. And you should be extremely worried that after 2 years, you are still continuing in a municipality, spending money from the provincial coffers that we could have spent it for other purposes. And I'm just worried when you say there's little that you can do when the Hawks and the law enforcement agencies are not doing anything, despite the fact that we've reported cases. There must be something. And I suggest that part of what this committee must resolve now is to call them together with you. We must call them together with you under one roof. Maybe we must even make it a physical meeting, maybe even for 2 days, to just come and explain, out of this case number that you deposited, that you opened, and nothing has happened, and why? Why has nothing happened in relation to these particular cases? And for me, this is the first of the whole thing. Now, we are in KwaZulu-Natal, KZN, not in any other province. I don't know, in the last 2 terms, how many political killings have happened in that municipality, in that province, especially of councillors and senior officials. It's a lot. There are a lot of reports. We run a report and police investigations. We have asked the police these questions. It is quite clear that people are getting killed. And what doesn't come out very clear to me, at least, is to say, are the oversight bodies, including MPECs, scared to do their job because they are threatened? If you have so much security deployed to your provincial representatives, are they doing what they are supposed to do without any fear, favor, or prejudice because of these political killings that are paid. For me, this is a question that I'm asking myself. If there is a problem, we must deal with it. And at this point that I'm raising now, it has not come out very clear from you to say, yeah, they really actually have an impact in the work that we do. And people are sensitive when they've got to enter certain terrains, when they ought to open certain doors, because anything is possible in all these municipalities where we are intervening. Is this happening or is it not happening? I'm asking myself, and I really said, please comment on these issues that I'm raising to you. Now, the next issue is, if there's any province that is politically contested, especially with regard to coalitions and coalition governments, is KZN, what impact are these political differences and tensions having in terms of stabilizing our municipalities? Because what is clear is that there's been a lot of changes, including in these municipalities, which you are reporting about here. Political changes in terms of this political party or this coalition, the next time this coalition, the next election, this coalition. Sometimes in the middle of a term, there are changes. When there are by-elections, other parties win, other parties lose seats, and therefore there are changes that are happening in those municipalities. And that question is not coming out here to say that issue and that issue alone impacts quite negatively in us bringing about stability, in about normalizing these municipalities in KZN. The other question would be, and please, if I didn't hear you properly, say so, but the other question is, you said Section 139 is an intervention. It's unlike Section 154 where you negotiate. You are quite right to a certain extent, but Section 154 must be a daily routine of both the national government and the provincial government. This is at the heart of your job. The function of a provincial government is to support municipalities, is to strengthen the municipalities, is to monitor municipalities, to enable them to perform their functions, to fulfill their obligations under the Constitution and any other law. And it doesn't come out clear. It seems that, I don't know, say I'm wrong, I didn't hear you well, say to me that you don't intervene when there is a problem or you don't perform that support function, monitoring and strengthening of capacity of municipalities when there is a problem. Because your job basically, especially as a department of COGTA, allocated that function by the provincial government, is to support the municipality, is to strengthen their capacity, is to monitor them so that they perform their functions and that they exercise their powers to meet their own constitutional obligation. This is what they are expected to do. And I really want to talk to that because Section 154 must be on daily basis. You must do it daily. You're doing it daily because it will help you to develop some early warning systems that when there is a problem, you can see it in advance that there in that municipality there is a problem. Before the crisis escalates, we would have intervened and resolved the problem. And please speak to that because I want to get that clarity from you. And for me, that is quite important because intervention can be a reactive exercise that you react to a crisis. But if you are proactive and you are able to facilitate municipalities all the time, you won't necessarily even need intervention. Look, I can go on and raise certain issues, but the bottom line for me is 7 years is quite a long time for an intervention where you spend the money from the province to intervene, not even to support, because it is intervention. If it's 139, not 154, it is an intervention. It's quite a long time in one municipality, where this municipality changes the political leadership all the time. I think we need to express these views so that you know, and with that, we find a way forward in terms of dealing with these particular issues. Yeah, I think that is that. I will all pause here and allow you to respond. About what we need to do specifically with regard to this, because municipalities can be under administration for forever. There must be a proper diagnostic and remedied and bring the right medication to that particular problem. Over to you, HOD and MEC.
Thank you, Sir President. The comments are noted. The issue of the period of intervention is a very legitimate and, in certain instances, a contentious one. And you would find that in certain instances, when we interact with the municipality, maybe the MEC would even call the troikas of this municipality to say, but we have intervened. This is where we are with the intervention. These are the weaknesses. There is a consideration to some extent to pull out. In certain instances, we are advised by councillors. Some councillors that know if you pull out here, we will be in a worse off situation than you have left us. I agree, and I think all of us would agree, that a 7 year period is a long period. But what do we also do?
No. Actually, with due respect, just wait here. You can't say that you are advised by councillors. You can't really say that. If a municipality is under Section 139, it is under ICU. It is you intervene, you take powers, because this patient is ill. This patient can advise you that now I'm better, or if you leave, I'm going to get sick. It must be that doctor that is sent to a patient, and in this case, it's a provincial representative. Who you send to a municipality? How does a patient advise you to say, please don't go, I'm going to die? It's the doctor. Who's qualified? Are you sending people who are not qualified to these municipalities, who are then advised by the patients that I'm not okay? Please, HOD, give us proper answers. We want to know what is happening. Please.
Okay,
that's your comments are provoking us. You can't say that counselor who's under ICU that you took powers from is the one that is advising you not to leave. Where is the doctor to realize that? Because this person is under ICU. It must be you as a provincial government, and you alone, because you have diagnosed that there is a problem and you took powers from a municipality. That you must say, now this patient is healthy. This patient is okay. It can't be that patient who decides that is healthy or not healthy when a qualified doctor is doing that, unless you don't send people who are qualified to do that job. And that's your response, HOD. Please correct it. I beg you. Please correct that.
Maybe let me. I'm not sure whether the chairperson heard me what I said.
I did hear you.
I said, chairperson, the MEC at times will engage not the administrator or the ministerial rep. There are engagements with the MECs would have with councillors or troikas of those municipalities. That's what I said. And I said, they would, some of them, not all, make an indication to the Honorable MEC when the report would have been tabled. It's not that we are going to seek permission from them whether to proceed or to stop the intervention. But as a matter of courtesy, the MEC with us would convene those meetings. As the Honorable Chairperson has indicated, that these are elected representatives. From time to time, we do interact with them. The MEC would interact with them in her or in his own right during the intervention. And you would not just call those meetings without really wanting also to get to understand the challenges and solicit some of the input from the councillor. It is in that context that I am saying we do listen to what the members of the council would say. Yes, there is a view one would legitimately hold that we are being ineffective. It's a very judgment. If the committee says we have not done a decent job, we will live with it. And we will take counsel from the committee to say, if there are weaknesses, how then do we address those weaknesses? We don't possess all the wisdom in terms of dealing with matters of this nature. As we subject ourselves to portfolio committees, it is when we are also advised, it is where we are also guided and provided with the way forward. Before any intervention gets extended, the embassy would go and table the report with the recommendation to the Executive Council. And the Executive Council would consider the report and say that yes or no. And if the Executive Council is of the view that the intervention must proceed, what do we do then? We advise the NCOP. We advise the minister. At all material times where these interventions have been extended, all these structures would have been advised accordingly, including the minister for court. I'm not sure again when I said when cases have been opened, when we have gone and reported these matters to the police, when we have even subsequently had engagement with the police, I'm not sure what else then probably could be the expectation on the part of the department in ensuring then that these matters that would have been referred to the police are taken care of. Again, as I'm saying, that probably the committee will be in a position to provide counsel to us as to what else we may need to do. Then sometimes the intervention can be of a reactive nature. I did point to one example where I said we had an instance in Moimbopane where, because of the seriousness of the events at the time, there was no time to say, let us escalate. Probably that were these from section 154, as they escalated now to 139, 1A of POC. But the Executive Council took a decision to say, but the effect of these actions by councillors in the May do warrant that there be an immediate and implement the of section 134, 139, and that, in my view, was a reactive one. However, the majority of these interventions are proactive, because from time to time, we've got units in the department, the municipal support units, that every month would have engagement. We call them one-on-one engagement between us as co-opter and the municipality. We compile reports. We categorize municipalities and we say these municipalities are so critical that they could be deemed to be dysfunctional. These are the category where we say they're functional and you have got the middle in between. It is from this report that we're able to draw the conclusion to say, based on this information and other reports, of course, that this municipality requires the placement in terms of Section 139 or Section 1 and intensified in terms of Section 154. As the chair correctly points out, that it is our duty that on a daily basis we confine ourselves to monitoring and supporting municipalities. Yes, we take the point. We may not be monitoring these municipalities as one would have expected. We may not be supporting them to the extent that one is expected. But again, why do we come to forums of this nature? So that where we are weak, we are given support, even ourselves, we are guided, we are given the appropriate counsel, so that when we leave this meeting, we are able to go back and say, this is the directive, or this is the direction committee would want us to take. The cost of this exercise, Jefferson, we are going to table, we are going to draw the report, we are going to formulate a response, submit to the committee, if the committee so direct. But in my closing comment, Jefferson, I do make a point that the Jefferson is not unreasonable when you are raised the point that 7-year period is too much a period to place municipalities under intervention. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Before we do our concluding remarks, MEC, I want to come in. But even before that, any member of parliament who has got a pressing issue that would like to raise, I'm sure we will be okay. We can formulate a view and a way forward in terms of our recommendations. But if there's anyone who wants to say something, you're free to do that. I'll be guided by you. We have about 5 minutes. No, you are okay. Thank you very much. MEC, please come in before we do concluding remarks.
Sorry, Chairperson, the MEC did indicate to me that she's having some connectivity challenges in the event.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that being the case, I think that we can summarize the discussion as follows. That one, this is a report, a presentation that was made by KZN in respect of all municipalities placed under Section 139. This report shared with us certain information and progress in respect of the implementation of the Section 139-1B. It made certain observations as well as some recommendations that needs to be considered. And part of that is to invoke Section 139-5 of the Constitution to enforce a recovery plan and to stabilize the finances of the municipalities. that the committee has carefully listened to the department and the MEC. We have asked several questions that needs to be clarified, and we express certain concerns. And the centerpiece of our concerns are that 7 years is a very long time. There must be time frames stipulated per intervention, that there must be regular reports that must come forward for consideration, that the department must continuously review the intervention and place certain measures that must ameliorate the situation, and that we request that the costing of this intervention per municipality, per critical area, per critical component must be made to the committee within 2 years, that the HOD express certain issues that need to be dealt with. One of those is that the MEC is meeting some director, some heads of municipalities or the senior leadership in the municipalities, where they advise the MEC in a particular way. In that HOD, we know and we remember that a provincial representative was the one deployed.
Hey, Baga, 99 live.
Lebohan Trade, mute. How one that the provincial rep deployed or attached to each municipality are the ones who must report regularly and properly and formally and structurally to the MEC, and that is the reason why we appointed such people as administrators in the municipalities. But the LCB has indicated that when there is a need for an extension of intervention, they follow the necessary processes, inform the Executive Council of KwaZulu-Natal, and the Executive Council informs the Minister as well as the NCOP. I've not seen that. I'm sure we must also make it part of the 2 weeks period that you must produce that evidence, and we will follow that particular matter up as well with the chairperson of the NCOP, because our concern would be you can't extend without us approving the extension, because when we approve the intervention, we say it must last for 18 months, it must last for 2 years, and so on. And it follows for me that when you need an extension, you must only get it from the NCOP, because it is the one that gave the final approval for the intervention or for the invocation of Section 139(1)(b) of the Constitution. And my view, just as a way of emphasizing, Section 913(1)(b) must follow Section 139(1)(a). You can't invoke, no matter the issues at play, you can't invoke Section 139(1)(b) before you would have exhausted or explored Section 139(1)(b) by issuing a directive to the municipality. And that, our view is that municipalities have got to be monitored regularly, all the time, all the way. There are a lot of things that the municipalities are obligated to do in terms of reporting to the provincial government itself, the report on the IDPs, on the SDPs, on their performance plan, on their mix. Mix is even worse, that they must report so 10 days or 15 days. After 15 days of every month, they've got to report about their mix. And with all these reports that come from the municipalities, we can see whether this municipality is performing or not, it is spending its finances or not, it is doing what is expected of it. And that monitoring is quite important. It's at the heart of what both the provincial government and the national government have got to do to ensure that municipalities indeed are functioning. I think in the overall, that we are going to compose a report quite urgently, and that report will serve before the House. We will request that happen before we adjourn during this term, that the report is tabled about the state of intervention in KZN, and that will encapsulate the recommendations of this committee after having received all the information, so that at the end of the day we must report to Council, to the House, about the work that we have done. I think that concludes broadly the discussion that we had. What comes out very clear is that there is a lot of work that the department is doing in those municipalities affected in the province. There is a lot of information that is available, but we request that these recommendations, based on our observations that we see, must be followed up, because they are important. The bottom line is that the reviews can't happen forever. They need to have the time frame like projects. They must have the beginning and they must have the ending. And if there are issues, we must iron out those particular issues. With that, it brings us to the end of our meeting. This was a very, very informative meeting. It was helpful in the sense that it has gave us an opportunity to understand the issues at hand. Oh, I see DM Vance Namashe. Good afternoon, DM. I didn't recognize you properly, and I didn't see that you are part of this meeting. Good afternoon, DM. Oh, I see his name here. Be that as it may, that then brings us to the end.
Thank you, Chair. He is in a bereaved family of Inkosi Khumalo. We were just introducing him. Sorry for that.
And checking whether you want to say something, but it's okay if he's tired up, but I was seeing that he has logged into this meeting. With that, honorable members and everybody else who attended this meeting, we really appreciate you to have attended this meeting, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair, for inviting us as well.
Thank you, Chair.